KQED. From KQED Public Radio, I'm Stephanie Martin with Quest, our weekly look at science and the environment. What's in that water coming out of your tap? Increasingly sophisticated tests detect contaminants we couldn't have even measured 10 years ago. But just because something's there, does that mean it's harmful? Amy Standen reports on one contaminant we're learning more about, pharmaceuticals like ibuprofen and birth control pills, and what we might do about them.
It's surely a sign of the times that a laboratory used to test drinking water would be so high security, we can't even tell you exactly where it is.
This is our lobby area, and it is a secure facility.
Jim Scott is the water quality lab manager for the Santa Clara Valley Water District. He swipes a key card to let us into the district's new $18 million testing lab, which opened this spring.
It is secure because of the nature of the work that we do and the type of chemicals that we have here in the laboratory.
This lab will be a command center should terrorists ever strike California's drinking water supply. Ditto if any other waterborne contaminant starts making people sick. But the real bread and butter work done here is much more mundane than that. It's the daily testing for things like mercury, lead, E. coli, contaminants that all water agencies routinely test for. And that list is growing, says Scott, as he opens the door to a small, mostly empty lab.
This was designed for the future needs of the water district so that when we do get into the monitoring of pharmaceuticals and such, this is where the instrumentation will be.
In recent years, scientists at water agencies across the country have found tiny amounts of things like heart medicine, hormones, and painkillers in their drinking water. Here in Santa Clara County, scientists found traces of 8 different drugs, including ibuprofen and a cholesterol control medication. Now, keep in mind, those doses are so small they're almost undetectable in the parts per billion or per trillion. Put in perspective, one part per billion is a single second in the span of 32 years. The doses are tiny enough that they may well have no effect on us at all. Still, the discoveries have raised questions. For starters, how did the drugs get there?
Can we dump this out somewhere?
Dump it out over here. Sure.
Over in Berkeley, Joel Kreisberg rummages through an 18-gallon plastic drum filled with expired pills. Kreisberg runs the Teleosis Institute, which, among other things, runs a collection program for drugs that people don't want anymore.
The most common were acetaminophen, aspirin, Tylenol, but the first prescription drug here is prednisone. That's a very strong prescription drug. My thinking is that's one of the medications that people have a strong side effect to, and therefore it gets thrown out too much.
Until recently, the recommended way to throw out a pill was to simply flush it down the toilet. And to get a sense of how many pills that works out to, consider how many prescriptions we Americans receive in the first place.
Actually, the latest statistic was about, I think as of 2005, there's over 1 billion prescriptions made by physicians in the United States. And if you're over 75, you'll get 12 prescriptions a year.
Most of those drugs get swallowed, just as the doctor prescribes. But since our bodies don't absorb everything we feed them, a small amount passes right through, ending up once again down the toilet. When toilet water gets to the treatment plant, it's heavily purified and cleaned and then released into rivers, bays, and the ocean. But that doesn't eliminate the pharmaceuticals, some of which will eventually make it back into the drinking water supply. So, should we worry?
I think it's certainly scary in terms of perception.
That's Shane Snyder. He's a toxicologist with the Southern Nevada Water Authority and an expert on drugs in drinking water.
As terms of scientific knowledge, I don't think it is very scary.
Snyder says that what's changed here isn't the existence of the drugs, it's our ability to see them at such incredibly low levels.
What's really amazing is if you begin to look at what we can see versus where the health effects occur, we're becoming able to detect things at orders of magnitude lower than any appreciable health effect.
Still, we don't know for sure how those tiny amounts of drugs might interact with each other. And it's not just a concern for humans. Studies suggest that hormones, like estrogen, may be part of what's causing reproductive problems in fish. Everyone wants drinking water to be as clean as possible, but the question, says Snyder, is, well, what can we do about it?
That's my favorite question. Actually, we have never found a treatment process that could treat every single pharmaceutical to lower than the detection limits that we're using today.
If we did reduce levels somewhat, it would require state-of-the-art technologies like ozone treatment or reverse osmosis. Those come with their own costs. They're hugely expensive and energy-intensive. Snyder wonders if the costs are justified.
I don't believe that we've come to the point where we can dismiss it and say this is a non-issue altogether. The point is one of prioritization.
Those are precisely the kinds of questions that the EPA is grappling with right now. But with so little data out there about health effects, it's a long process. It will take regulators about a decade to decide which drugs, if any, are harmful in our water and what to do about it. For Quest, I'm Amy Standen, KQED Radio News.
Quality aside, do we have enough drinking water for California's future? Watch Quest TV on KQED tomorrow night at 7:30. Or see it online at kqed.org/quest. I'm Stephanie Martin, KQED Public Radio.